Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Glad you could make it. This just in, Germany has banned the makers of Tom Cruise's new movie from filming at military sites in the country because Tom Cruise is a Scientologist. According to the BBC. The BBC reports the German Defense Ministry said Cruise has, quote, publicly professed to being a member of the Scientology cult, end quote. Germany said Scientology masquerades as a religion to make money, but leaders of the church reject this. Blah, 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 blah. What? Is this real? Yeah, it's on the BBC's. Scientology has been monitored in Germany in the belief that its activities are, quote, directed against the free democratic order, end quote, in the country. Okay. That's real. That's a real story. Germany bans Tom. What's he going to do? What's Cruise going to do? Show up in Germany and go, and everybody's going to turn into Scientologists? Oh, my God. All religion sucks. So as far as Scientology, you know, I couldn't care less. How about this, though? There was an event in D.C. yesterday at the White House, the Presidential Scholars Program. And this is high school students from all 50 states and District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Americans living abroad, 15 at-large students, up to 20 students in the arts. All these kids are picked on the basis of outstanding scholarship and service and leadership and creativity and being smart kids, right? So they show up for this awards program, and Bush gives a little speech, and then one of the kids presents him with a letter, urging him to, it was signed by 50 high school seniors who are in this Presidential Scholars Program. And the letter urges him to halt, quote, violations of human rights, end quote. The White House said Chuckle Nuts had not expected the letter, but took a moment to read it and talk with the young woman who handed it to him. Deputy Press Secretary Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino said, quote, the president enjoyed a visit with students, accept the letter. Upon reading it, let the student know the United States does not torture and that we value human rights. The students had been invited to the East Room to hear Bush speak about his effort to win congressional reauthorization of his so-called education law that is destroying education in this country, the one known as No Child's Behind Left. The handwritten letter said the students, quote, believe we have a responsibility to voice our convictions. The letter went on, imagine these arrogant little snots addressing the president of the United States this way. Dick Cheney, get their names. The letter went on, quote, we do not want America to represent torture. We urge you, Mr. President, to do all in your power to stop violations of the human rights of detainees, to cease illegal renditions, and to apply the Geneva Convention to all detainees, including those designated enemy combatants, end quote. That was in the letter. We urge you to do all in your power. Kids, 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 this rat bastard is the one who authorized... Well, I guess you already know that. Okay. The designation as a presidential scholar is one of the highest honors for high school students, graduating high school students in this country. Presidential scholar. During his speech, before he got the letter, Bush said, I know all of you worked hard to reach this day. Your families are proud of your effort, and we welcome your family members here. Your teachers are proud of your effort, and we welcome your teachers. And our entire nation is proud to call you presidential scholar, and we'd welcome the entire nation. Just kidding. We do not want America to represent torture. We urge you, Mr. President, to do all in your power to stop violations of the human rights of detainees, to cease illegal renditions, and to apply the Geneva Convention to all detainees, including those designated enemy combatants, end quote. Well, the president enjoyed a visit with the students, accept the letter and part read it, let the student know the United States is not torture, and we value human rights. We do, said Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino. Maybe there is hope. It damn sure isn't in my generation. Maybe it's in the generation two behind me. Huh? You think? Good for you, kids! From the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, by Mijal Grinberg, Haaretz correspondent. The Israeli Land Administration, the ILA, with the assistance of a large police force and Israeli Defense Force soldiers, demolished dozens of tin shack homes Monday in the unrecognized Bedouin villages Al-Haran and Al-Ti'atir in the northern Negev Desert. The ILA, the Israel Land Administration, is destroying the village built on government-owned land and evacuating its inhabitants so that a Jewish community named Hiran can be established in the area. 14 shacks, which house some 100 people, have been destroyed by bulldozers so far. Bedouin women attempted to get their children out of the house, but police wanted to speed up the process, so they grabbed the playpens with the children inside and did not let the mothers come near. But Ju'ab Abu Akayan said, "Tonight we will sleep on the ground." Young man, roughly 18 years of age, wearing orange shirts and taking part in the evacuation, removed the Bedouins' property from their homes and placed it in piles on the ground outside. Haaretz has discovered that these teenagers are workers employed by subcontractors hired by the Israel Land Administration. According to the evacuations, they are being paid in cash and denied labor rights. According to Abdallah, the Legal Center for Arab Minority Rights in Israel, the residents of the village have been living there for 51 years! They were transferred to the site in 1956 while under martial law. The land they originally owned was transferred to Kibbutz Shoval, while the Bedouin were leased 3,000 dunam of land for agriculture and grazing. In August 2001, the ILA submitted a report on the establishment of new communities, which included Hiran. The Bedouin residents living in the area appeared under the title of special problems that may affect the establishment of the community. The government approved the establishment of Hiran in 2002, and in 2004, the state submitted a court order claiming that residents of Al-Haran should be evacuated as they are using state lands without permission. Bedouin women attempted to get their children out of the house, but police wanted to speed up the demolition process, so they grabbed the playpens with the children inside and did not let the mothers come near. Source, Haaretz.com. Let that one sink in. The mothers didn't get their kids out fast enough. Out of the playpens. And we wonder why they hate us, us being the United States and Israel, because we are forever linked, forever. There is no difference between the United States and Israel in the minds of the people in the Middle East who have watched since 1948 the actions of the Israeli government and the American governments, Democrat and Republican, for all these years. Israel, U.S., U.S., Israel, it's all the same.
I breathe thy soul, ye Father Tempest, to bring them home from anywhere. I live my life, my love I gave them, to guide them through this world of strife. I hope and pray.
and conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Well, you can tell what kind of a program it's going to be tonight, huh? High school students begging this mass killer in the White House to please stop. Please stop torturing. You know, we're going to inherit this country, Mr. Bush, after you are worm food, after you are nothing more than a footnote in history. We are going to have to deal with what you are doing to this planet. We're going to have to deal with it. Our children, ourselves. Please, Mr. President, please, in the name of sweet Jesus Christ, in the name of whomever you believe in, Mr. Bush, please stop. Please stop torturing. Please stop renditioning. Please stop. Please quit violating human rights. Please quit denying people their legal rights where it concerns the things that you are charging them with. Please acknowledge and honor the Geneva Conventions. Please, Mr. Bush, we are high school seniors. We are 17 and 18 years old. We are speaking truth to your degenerate power. Please stop, Mr. Bush. Please stop. That's what it's come to in this country. High school seniors have to approach this rotten bastard with a letter asking him to stop. Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are powerless. They can do nothing. Nothing. The Democratic Party leadership is paralyzed or totally co-opted. Or both. So the high school seniors, please, Mr. Bush, stop. Okay? Huh? Please? You're handing us chaos in our future. We're 17. We're 18. You have drugs in the top drawer of your bedroom, Mr. Bush, older than we are. Please stop. Thanks for the letter. I'll read you a letter. And then the report in Haaretz. Haaretz. I'm sorry. Okay. Haaretz. The Israeli newspaper. Bedouins. Is that the same as the N-word in the United States? Bedouin? Tin shacks. They have been there for 51 years, this little village. Get them out. Tear them down. Throw them away. We need to establish a settlement. Get them out. Smash them. They're not moving fast enough. Grab the children in the playpens and move them. Fifty-one years living in a refugee camp where they were ordered to go by martial law 51 years ago, and then the court in Israel issues an order saying they are there illegally. You rotten bastards, who sent them there? Who put them there? They were moved there under force of martial law, where they have been left to rot until it was time to establish a settlement. And then the mothers who didn't move their babies fast enough were denied the right to scoop them up, while members of the IDF scooped them up for the mothers. Oh, and the people involved in moving all the belongings and dumping them out in the desert? Underpaid subcontractors. Oh my God, I smell the stench of Dick Cheney in that one. High school seniors in the Presidential Scholars Program, good luck. Good luck. The American government and the Israeli government are handing you generations of potential terror, slaughter, bombings, murder, killings, God only knows what. Good luck. And as far as your request to this chuckle nuts freak in the White House to please stop torturing, children, children, We don't torture. We don't rendition. We don't lie. We're the United States of By God America, students. We're apple pie and mom and the flag. That's who we are.
And I am guilty, I am war, and I am the root of all evil. Lord, and I can't drive on the left side of the road. It's a hard life, it's a hard life, very hard life, hard life.
No American will be allowed to torture another human being anywhere in the world.
And if we poison our children with hate, in the hard life, it's all that we'll go. And there ain't no place in this world for these kids to go. Hard life forever,
we're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
We were young together. We were on the ball.
It's about 25 before the hour. How do you explain Cheney? I mean, not that you would want to, but this story about Cheney rejecting oversight... Regarding how classified documents are handled by his office. Everyone else in the government has to put up with it because he doesn't want people to know what he and his aides have been doing with classified information. This son of a bitch belongs... I swear... I'm sorry, I used the SOB word again, didn't I? I apologize. This man, this half-man, this subhuman, this... See, there I go again. belongs in a prison somewhere or at a war crimes tribunal. This is astonishing, this guy, huh? The most powerful man in America. Who is it? Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney. Back in March of 2006, Dan Frumkin wrote, is it Dan Frumkin wrote this? Investigative reporter Murray Wass has developed a compelling case that the use and abuse of classified information has been key to the White House's success, not only in contriving a bogus case for war in Iraq, but in keeping charges of deception from becoming a major issue in the 2004 election, and arguably to this day. Time and time again, in a strategy that most likely owes its existence to Cheney, the White House has selectively leaked or declassified secret intelligence findings that serve its political agenda, while aggressively asserting the need to keep secret the information that would tend to discredit it. Also, starting in early 2003, Bush granted Cheney broad new powers to personally classify and declassify material. Bush's move, ironically, came in the very same order that Cheney is now in part resisting. And let's not forget the elephant in the room, as Josh Meyer writes in the LA Times, quote, according to documents released by a House committee, Cheney's staff has blocked efforts by the National Archives Information Security Oversight Office to enforce a key component of the presidential order, which is a mandatory on-site inspection of the vice president's office. At least one of those inspections would have come at a particularly delicate time when Cheney's former chief of staff, Irving Lewis Libby, and other aides were under criminal investigation for their roles in leaking the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame. Finally, there's the question of whether Cheney is trying to make a broader point here. The vice president, along with his longtime legal advisor, David Addington, are widely viewed as the guiding forces behind the Bush administration's expansion of executive power. Cheney is also, hands down, the most powerful vice president in history. So, wouldn't it be in character for him and his top aides to maneuver to establish the vice presidency as a uniquely powerful and unconstrained force. Yes, indeed. This guy is really out of control, isn't he? It's comic. It is comedy. It's tragedy. It's Shakespearean. It's Orwellian. It's Stalinesque. It's It continues. It just goes on and on. Cheney is so far above the law, he urinates on the rest of us. He stands way up there. Hi, Dick. No, look out. Did you have to do that? He makes water on the Constitution, on the American public, on the executive branch, on the legislative branch, on anybody and everybody, on gay folk who want to get married and have children. He makes water on all of us. He pees on us and laughs. When's his surgery? Soon. Our Father, who art in heaven. See, I might even pray for something like that. Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, the ranking Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee, said today that he was urging lawmakers and President Bush to change course quickly in Iraq to protect a further erosion of America's standing in the world. I'm sure the writer at the, is this New York Times or Associated Press who wrote that, meant to say to change course quickly to prevent a further erosion of America's standing in the world. Lugar, in an interview today following a speech he delivered on the Senate floor last night in which he called on the administration to rethink its Iraq strategy, said, quote, "The president has the opportunity now to bring about a bipartisan foreign policy. I don't think he'll have that option very long," end quote. Really, Dick? You really think that he has it? Oh, really? For months, Mr. Lugar has kept his skepticism about the president's Iraq policy to himself. Yeah, that's because you're a Republican, Dick, and that means you're a filthy coward. You're a filthy coward. Just think, Richard, if you would have opened your mouth when you started questioning this psychopath's policy, how many Americans, how many Iraqis would still be alive? How many fetuses would still have a chance? How many children would not have been blown up? How many American soldiers would still have all four of their limbs and their brains? Think about that, Richard. But you had to think about it, huh? Oh, did you? You kept your skepticism to yourself. Seldom offering anything beyond a wait-and-see reply. But 3 weeks ago, Mr. Lugar said, he privately concluded that the troop buildup plan was not achieving its goals, and he began preparing remarks he delivered Monday evening. Oh, good for you, Richard. Oh, my God, my heart is just palpating. Just, I can't believe it. You actually, really? 3 weeks ago you started writing your remarks, and all this time you've kept it to yourself. Eh, Richard? You're being hailed now, Richard, as an anti-war activist, as somebody who wants to end this slaughter. But we know what you are, Richard. You are cowardly, hypocritical snot. That's what you are. You're a typical Republican. You're a liar and a cheat and a co-conspirator in mass murder. Ah, but the media, Richard, is fawning all over you. Right? What were you, the lead story tonight on how many newscasts? There you are, Richard. You filthy coward. Mr. Lugar said on the Senate floor, in my judgment, the costs and risks of continuing down the current path outweigh the potential benefits that might be achieved. That's what he said. Persisting indefinitely with the surge strategy will delay policy adjustments that have a better chance of protecting our vital interests over the long term. He said that, too. Oh, my God. Lugar is, of course, among the highest-ranking Republican in Congress to call for a troop drawdown in Iraq. A position that Senator George Voinovich, an Ohio Republican, quickly echoed today in a letter to the president. While the White House moved to play down the criticism, The comments from the two Midwestern senators reverberated across Capitol Hill today. It did. We don't think that there's a chance that this is going to work. Other Republicans said their patience also was expiring. Senator Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, said, quote, I think September is absolutely the end point of decision. Whether individuals will come to a conclusion before that, I think it's likely, as the reverberations continued across Capitol Hill today. That's what it says. Reverberated. Echoed. Reverberated and echoed. Yeah. White House officials attempted today to minimize the importance of Mr. Lugar's comments, saying the senator's opposition to the administration's Iraq plan was nothing new. It's nothing new! New! Nothing at all! There's no there! Speaking during his daily news briefing, the White House Press Secretary Tony Snow dismissed questions about whether the White House was concerned that Mr. Lugar's criticism of the Iraq War would encourage fellow Republicans to join him in his break with the president. We don't care, you know? We don't care. It doesn't mean anything. There's nothing new. It's all old. This stuff is weeks old. It means nothing. Nothing's new here, there, nowhere. Still, the Bush administration is working vigorously to limit any political damage, hastily setting up a meeting this week between Mr. Lugar and Mr. Bush's National Security Advisor, Stephen Hadley. Democrats seized upon the remarks from the Republicans and said they were a sign that the tide is shifting in the protracted Iraq debate. Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, said, I'm encouraged by what he said, and it just adds to the momentum for change. Hopefully he'll take some very specific steps to implement what his words mean. They are powerful words. They're powerful words, Carl? Powerful words?
The president has the opportunity now to bring about a bipartisan foreign policy. I don't think he'll have that option very long.
Jesus, you're right! You're right, Carl! Those are awfully powerful words! I'm almost knocked out of my chair!
Persisting indefinitely with the surge strategy will delay policy adjustments that have a better chance of protecting our vital interests over the long term.
Oh my God! You're right, Carl Levin! Those are mighty powerful words! They are indeed! I really am just taken aback here! Holy Toledo! Oh, that's in Ohio, you know.
Time to learn what's in the rest. Why are we all fighting? Huh? Why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong. Forgetting where we've come from. All of this violence is killing me. Silence is failing me. No, no, don't do that.
There's a time I'm running.
It's about 9 before the hour. It's not just kids and Senator Richard Lugar and a newfound burst of bravery. The Republican, the ranking Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, it really doesn't matter. These people are interchangeable. They're little parts that can be moved around by the corporate lobbyists that own them. But the U.S. Conference of Mayors has taken a stand. Yes, it has. Oh, my goodness. The Conference of Mayors is meeting in Los Angeles. It endorsed a resolution yesterday calling for the Bush administration to begin planning for the swift withdrawal of troops from Iraq. And it was hell. It was a bloodbath in there. I'm talking about in the Conference of Mayors meeting. Yes, it was. According to the Associated Press, a chaotic debate on the motion echoed political divisions across the country. What political divisions? How many people still support this occupation and murder and slaughter? Huh? 30%? But you can write them off. Those are psychopathic Christian fundamentalist Republicans who really believe that Jesus will be happy when the pile of corpses is so high he can step out of the clouds and come down and rapture them. The other 70% of us say no. Fresno, California Mayor Alan Autry resigned from the conference immediately after the vote, saying the group had made a grave error. By hastily veering into foreign policy, he predicted the troops could be harmed. Oh, yes, you dumbass, that's very true. The insurgents, even as we talk, are planting an IED to get American soldiers because of the vote that the Council of National Convention of Mayors took, right? You sick whine. What do you want to bet this thug is a Republican, huh?
We can't have any dissent. That'll encourage the terrorists. Please, everybody be quiet. We have to support the president.
But Stanford, Connecticut Mayor Donnell Malloy? I'll be damned. Stanford, Connecticut Mayor Donnell Malloy said the war was draining money from classrooms. Really? And municipal services across the country. Yeah. And local governments have, quote, gotten to the boiling point, end quote. That's right, Mr. Malloy. Malloy said in an interview, quote, it's time to begin developing a plan to bring the troops home. Many people see this as a very important moment in our history, end quote. No, Malloy, it's not time to begin developing a plan. That was 3 years ago. Where were you? Did you take to the streets, Mr. Malloy? The resolution was adopted 51-47 after debate that stalled repeatedly on questions about amendments in parliamentary procedure. Of course. Of course. Amendments in parliamentary procedure. You're damn right. People being blown to pieces, but by God, we'll have the proper parliamentary procedure here at the U.S. Conference of Mayors before we do something as risky as declaring the obvious. The country is going down the crapper because of Bush and his invasion and his occupation and his psychotic vice president. And we have high school seniors telling him, please stop the torture, Mr. Bush, please. We're just kids, but, you know, please, like, stop. Yeah. Please. Conference of Mayors President Douglas Palmer, the mayor of Trenton, New Jersey, said he opposed the measure because he feared it would detract attention from the conference's agenda, which included dealing with issues from global warming to clean water. Mr. Palmer... When you have a cabal of murderers in charge of your country, what do you mean global warming and clean water? They're working toward neither of those. And the way you get the money for those, Mr. Palmer, is stop the war! And in case anyone thinks that the Conference of Mayors are nothing but a bunch of commies, the resolution was strictly symbolic. It was sponsored by Providence, Rhode Island Mayor David Cicilline. He said the conference supports the U.S. troops, though, completely and 110%. We support the troops. Just because we're asking for an end to death doesn't mean we don't support the troops. We support the troops. And this mayor called on the Bush White House to, quote, begin planning immediately for the swift and prudent redeployment of U.S. armed forces, end quote. Prudent. Got to have prudent in there. Prudent. Can't have any chaotic bugging out. Got to be prudent. If we have to kill a few more of the Iraqi bastards before we leave, if we have to give up a few more of our soldiers, well, okay, but keep it prudent. Prudent, you know. The resolution said continued U.S. military presence in Iraq is resulting in the tragic loss of American lives and wounding of American soldiers. What about the Iraqis? The Iraq war is reducing federal funds for needed domestic investments in education, health care, public safety, homeland security, and more. Please, Mr. Bush, could you stop torturing? You know, we're just kids and we don't know anything, but we know you're a murdering bastard. We do know that. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. Email here from Teresa in Ontario regarding the student's letter to Bush. Dear Mike, regarding the letter that these young people gave to Dim Sun made me feel like crying. Their innocence was quite touching. I'm sure they thought that they could make a difference somehow. Unfortunately, their pleas to Bush will go unanswered. The Bush crime family has much more work to do before they leave. There's killing that needs to be continued, more countries to invade, more sad souls to torture. It appears that Bush and Cheney, like all psychopaths, are decompensating and have gone into overdrive in order to destroy all they can while they still have the White House. Our children and grandchildren will be paying for this administration's sins for generations. Although I won't be here to see it, my hope is that they will be able to undo some of the damage and find some measure of peace. They can't do any worse than we have. Teresa in Ontario. The CIA has declassified nearly 700 pages of secret records today regarding its illegal activities during the first decades of the Cold War. The thing about the declassification is most of it has already been revealed publicly through Freedom of Information Acts and court orders and so on and so on and so on. But anyway, they published what amounts to a catalog of illegal activities that includes everything from attempts to kill foreign leaders to intercepted domestic mail, break-ins, burglaries. Huh? You like that? The documents were compiled beginning in 1973 at the order of then-CIA Director James Schlesinger, a real Nazi if ever one existed. He wanted to be prepared for congressional investigations that he expected in the wake of all those disclosures that arose during the Watergate scandal. Huh? James Schlesinger, somebody who would have cut your throat if you got in front of him in line at a drinking fountain. Assassination plots, break-ins, kidnappings. I like this one. The CIA conducted surveillance on numerous journalists, including Brit Hume, now an anchor for Fox News. Hume was working for investigative columnist Jack Anderson when he, Anderson, and other Anderson associates were put under surveillance in 1972 after Anderson published a column considered inside the agency as highly damaging, reporting that the CIA was, quote, tilting toward Pakistan in its Middle East operations. Yeah, Brit Hume, that Brit Hume. Another journalist who was placed under surveillance was Michael Gettler, the intelligence reporter for the Washington Post. Goes on to say that for 20 years, beginning in 1953, this is around the time we were overthrowing the government in Iran and the government in Guatemala and the government in the Congo, we were just overthrowing anybody who got in the way. Eventually, we'd go on to assassinate a couple of leaders in South Vietnam. Assassination, murder, government overthrow. Hey! They love us! They love us out there! For 20 years, beginning in 1953, the CIA screened at open mail the pass through the John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York. The operation was approved by three successive postmasters general. For 3 years beginning in 1969, the CIA similarly opened mail to and from China that passed through San Francisco. And this is my favorite. Have you ever seen the movie Jacob's Ladder? Oh, if you haven't, you need to see it. Jacob's Ladder. Tim Robbins has the lead. Listen. From 1963 to 1973, the CIA authorized and funded, quote, behavioral modification, end quote, research on Americans without their consent. The research primarily involved observation of their reactions in public, but some of it involved reactions to undisclosed drugs. Uh-huh. Behavioral modification. The CIA plotted the assassinations of Cuban President Fidel Castro, Patrice Lumumba, the democratically elected president of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Rafael Trujillo, the Dominican dictator. The mafia was also involved in the plot to assassinate Castro, the papers revealed, and Sam Giancana, boss of the Chicago mob, once used that connection to seek a personal favor. He wanted the CIA to spy on his girlfriend, Phyllis McGuire, of the McGuire sisters, a group. 90% of you don't know who they are. It was a group post-World War II. They sang close harmony like, oh, I don't know, the Lennon sisters. No, they were not John Lennon. Never mind. Never mind. Oh, my God, it's rough getting old. Because you know what you find out when you start getting old? People don't know what the hell you're talking about. When you're quoting factual events, profoundly disturbing factual events. Huh? Sam Giancana, who is he? He shared a girlfriend with John F. Kennedy, among other things. For 10 years, the CIA authorized and funded behavioral modification research on Americans without their consent. And you know where a lot of that occurred? In Southeast Asia. To our military people, our soldiers, who had no freaking idea what was going on. No idea whatsoever. Do you know what the United States government, the U.S. military, did to the nearly 3 million soldiers that passed through Vietnam? Do you know how many of them were treated as nothing more than disposable guinea pigs? Do you know what's happening to our troops in Iraq right now? So the CIA declassified 700 pages of secret records today. Well, aren't we just absolutely underwhelmed by that. Now, here's the interesting part. Back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s, there were a lot of us screaming. I was here in Atlanta screaming in a newspaper called, yes, The Great Speckled Bird. It was called A Radical Voice from the South. I can't tell you how many times we were investigated, broken into by the FBI. I know personally that my dossier, my file in Washington, D.C., and the FBI is probably more than two or three pages. I remember one time during the early Clinton years when WSB here in Atlanta sent me up there to broadcast from, there's a broadcast studio in the old executive office building, which is on the premises inside the gates and the wire and everything right next to the White House. And it had to do with the unveiling of the Clinton health care plan. So they sent me up and a producer and an engineer. And we were met by the Clintons, the person who handled radio liaison. And everybody got, we went to the uniform Secret Service gate to get in, went inside, and then you have to stand there behind some bars while they check you out. So my engineer got checked out and he went in. My producer got checked out and he went in. Of course, the radio liaison person got checked out and went in. Then it came my turn. 10 minutes went by. 20, half an hour, 45, an hour. Finally, the Clinton liaison person came out and said, is there a problem? And the uniformed Secret Service man said, we're almost there. I finally got in. yeah. So back in the day, we were reporting on this. We were talking about this, right? You remember? Hey, you old hippies out there, you remember, don't you, huh? Infiltration, COINTELPRO, destabilizing of civil rights and human rights groups in this country. You remember? And we screamed and we yelled and we said, hey, hey, they're trying to destabilize and infiltrate. No, you're out of your minds. What are you talking about? Here it is. Now, this is from the 70s. 40 almost years ago. Can you imagine when the truth of these rotten bastards that are running everything now, when that truth will come out? You're listening to the program. How old are you? 30? When you're 70, maybe, you'll find out that some of the things we talked about back here in 2003 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 were actually happening. The mad ramblings of Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh and Hugh Hewitt, to the contrary, notwithstanding, it is happening, only much worse. Much worse. So what are we going to do about it?
Recover. Can I return if I try? Should I trade my soul for another? Learn not to complain anymore. Should I stay and pretend that I'm happy? Like so many times before, yeah,
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
It's 21 past the hour. We're coming to your calls here in just a moment. This comes from John in Milford, New Jersey. He writes, Mike, I fear for your blood pressure. I'm sure one evening I'll hear a pop as a vein bursts in your head. I'm just wondering how you unwind at the end of one of these more intense sessions. Shoot up a small town somewhere? Challenge a bar to a fight? Expose yourself in front of a police station? Climb the Empire State Building carrying a blonde? Jesus, man, you need that cruise! Peace, John in Milford. Yeah, you're probably right. But normally my blood pressure runs like, 118 over 72. I don't dare put a cuff on when I'm on the air. It's probably 180 over 110 or something like that. But I appreciate the concern, John. I really do. But, I swim every day, swim a mile a day in order to work off the – that's in the summer. In the winter, I just walk. In order to work off that, all those chemicals. But I can't help it. In order to not get like that, I have to get out of this business. And even then it doesn't help. We were unemployed, Kathy, from August till October last year, from the time Air America dismissed me and Nova M hired me. And in that 3-month period, I still got pissed off every day. I mean, how can you not? But I take meds for it. I take lisinopril, and it works just fine. And I have a blood pressure kit. I might as well. Well, no, Kathy. I'm going to. John was concerned, and I'll take my BP some days, 2-3 times, just randomly check. Hey, what's the numbers now? Holy God! But I don't do it when I'm on the air. So I appreciate your concern. Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, and Joe Lieberman, all funded by Lockheed. This is something that appeared by Peacemaker at chicago.indymedia.org a couple of days ago. Chicago.indymedia.org. The summary is that Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, and Joe Lieberman each received $10,000 in campaign contributions from neocon-linked weapons maker Lockheed Martin's Political Action Committee during the 2006 election cycle. Could this be one reason Pelosi and Hillary refused to stand firmly for peace while Lieberman blatantly calls for even wider war? Goes on to say, are you surprised by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's continuing failure to take a firm stand for peace and an end to the U.S. occupation, dismantling, and slaughter of Iraq? Are you aware that if the Speaker truly wants to end the war, all she needs do is refuse to allow any war spending bill to come up for a vote in the House of Representatives? Are you suspecting that a President Hillary Clinton would not be a pro-peace, pro-diplomacy president? Are you shocked that candidate Clinton, along with several other Democratic candidates, refuses to rule out U.S. military use of nuclear weapons? Are you stunned by Senator Joe Lieberman's recent call for an all-out air attack on Iran? Did you know that each of these corporatist Democrats is partially funded by Lockheed Martin's Political Action Committee? The Center for Responsive Politics reports that during the 2006 election cycle, Pelosi, Clinton, and Lieberman each received $10,000 in campaign contributions from Lockheed Martin's Political Action Committee. According to CorpWatch.org, the Bethesda, Maryland-based Lockheed Martin, quote, is the world's number one military contractor as well as the world's largest arms exporter. Lockheed Martin built the U-2 and the SR-71 Blackbird spy planes. Today they make F-16, FA-22 jet fighters, the Hellfire and Javelin missile, as well as designing nuclear weapons. One Democrat you won't find on the list is Ohio Representative and pro-peace candidate for President Dennis Kucinich. Kucinich, a non-corporatist Democrat, refuses to accept contributions from corporate PACs. Check out the full list of the Lockheed Martin PAC campaign contributions for 2006, and you'll find, along with many Republicans, many other Democrats listed as recipients, including Senators Robert Byrd, who received $10,000, Dianne Feinstein, $5,000, Pennsylvania Representative John Murtha, $10,000, and Texas Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, $2,000. The list is at opensecrets.org. And it goes on and 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 on.
Don't sell that old cow for a car. You might want to stay right where you are. Take a little advice from me. 'Cause I read the one ads every day. The voices in the paper always if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boy, if you ain't got the do-re-mi.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
Yeah. One last thing, and then I want to go to your phone calls here. I had mentioned this in a little blogette that we do at Nova M's website and at MikeMalloy.com. The U.S. Northern Command, the military command that's responsible for so-called homeland defense, forget about NORAD, forget about all of our, the fact that the country is just chock-a-block with nuclear missiles and all sorts of radar defense system. We're talking about U.S. Northern Command that was put in place after 9/11. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the U.S. Northern Command, henceforth known as NORTHCOM, that's the folks responsible for Homeland Defense, has asked the Pentagon, that's the left hand asking the right hand, if it can establish its own Special Operations Command for domestic missions, for domestic missions, for domestic missions, for domestic missions. Do you hear me? William Arkin, blogging at Washington Post blog site, reported this a couple of days ago. The request, it was first reported in the Washington Examiner, would establish a permanent subcommand for responses to incidents of domestic terrorism as well as, here it comes, other occasions where special operations may be necessary on American soil. Gee, I wonder what that could be. Terrorism as well as other occasions where domestic operations may be necessary on American soil. The establishment of a domestic special operations mission and the preparation of contingency plans to employ commandos in the United States, would upend decades of tradition. Military actions within the U.S. are the responsibility of state militias, the National Guard, and federal law enforcement is a function of the FBI. Employing special operations for domestic missions sounds very ominous. And NORTHCOM's request earlier this year should receive the closest possible Pentagon and congressional scrutiny. Oh, yes. Okay. Let's have the Pentagon scrutinize what the U.S. Northern Command wants to do. Scrutinize, scrutinize, scrutinize. And, of course, the congressional geeks. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yes. Please do that. There's only one problem. NORTHCOM already is doing what it has requested permission to do. When NORTHCOM was established after the September 11th attack on this country, engineered somehow, I wish I knew how, by the Bush crime family. When NORTHCOM was established to be the military counterpart of the Department of Homeland Security, within its headquarters staff, it established a compartmented planning and operations cell, CPOC, a cell responsible for planning and directing a set of compartmented and sensitive operations on U.S., Canadian, and Mexican soil. In other words, these are the very special operations that NORTHCOM is now formally asking the Pentagon to beef up into a public and acknowledged subcommand. They're already doing it. NORTHCOM's compartmented and sensitive operations fall under the Joint Chiefs of Staff Focal Point Program. That's a separate communications and planning network used to hide special operations undertaken by the Joint Special Operations Command headquarters, located in North Carolina, and by the CIA and other domestic compartmented activities. Oh, my God. According to NORTHCOM documents, CPOC, that's the Compartmented Planning and Operations Cell, is involved in planning for a number of domestic missions, including non-conventional assisted recovery, integrated survey programs, information operations, special technical operations, and the last one, special activities. Special activities. What do you suppose that is? And as William Arkin asked at his blog site, what are these programs? CPOC's basic mission includes responding to incidents of weapons of mass destruction, support for continuity of government, protection of the president, response to domestic terrorism and insurrection, and domestic intelligence collection. Oh, yeah. And special activities, that's a euphemism for covert operations up there in the list. Special activities. They want to conduct special activities within the borders of the United States. Covert operations against whom? So, just thought you might want to know, but the Northern Command has asked permission. Of course, that kind of seems now, you know, like superfluous, inconsequential, beside the point, nonsensical, meaningless. I wonder if they made the request through Dick Cheney's office. You think? Yeah. Isn't this stuff astonishing? Isn't it just astonishing? I mean, can you believe this stuff? I can't. And by the way, with the decision by the Supreme Court the other day, yesterday, to loosen the restrictions on what companies and unions, as if union, oh yeah, okay. Let's throw in the and unions, because you know the unions are really powerful these days. The Supreme Court loosened the restrictions on what companies can spend on television advertisements just before elections by 5-4. And two of those votes were Roberts and Sammy the Fish Alito, two candidates that we Democrats begged, screamed, petitioned, phoned, emailed, please petition. Filibuster. Don't let these people. Please, Democrats. Oh, no. We're going to wait till something important comes along. I hate the Democratic Party leadership. It makes me nauseous every time I think about them. Especially in the Senate. You rat bastards. So here we go. Here we go. By a vote of 5-4, the court has opened a significant loophole in the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act of 2002, familiarly known as the McCain-Feingold Law, to curb curb donation to campaigns. Forget it. It's gone now. McCain-Feingold, gone. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts Jr. said that when regulating what can be said in the campaign and when it may be said, quote, the First Amendment requires us to err on the side of protecting political speech rather than suppressing it, end quote. What? Protecting political speech? This from a corrupt, filthy Nazi administration who made it clear from the beginning, if you do not agree with this, if you speak out against this, if you exercise your First Amendment rights, you are on the side of the terrorists. In another 5-4 ruling involving free speech, the Supreme Court ruled against an Alaska high school student, finding that educators can prohibit student expression that can be interpreted as advocating drug use. What was it? Was that the Bongs for Jesus banner that these kids unfurled? Bongs for Jesus? Goodbye, McCain-Feingold. Goodbye. Bong hits for Jesus. Oh, and guess who argued successfully, as it turns out, against the First Amendment rights of the students? Kenneth Starr. He was the attorney on behalf of the school authorities that said, argued whatever rights students may have to express themselves, thumbing their noses at school officials' anti-drug messages is not one of them. Bong hits for Jesus? Well. So to all the Democrats in the United States Senate who gave us the middle finger when we begged, screamed, pleaded, petitioned, threatened to hold our breath, threatened to never vote for them again, threatened to turn blue, if they didn't filibuster these Nazis. To all those Democratic leaders, thanks. We really appreciate it.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's bad, you know. 10 before the hour. So let's go to the phones for the rest of the program. You want to? Let's start right now, and we will start with Will. Who is Will from Michigan? You just got into Atlanta for the social forum that's occurring this weekend in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, Mike. It's been a really interesting trip. We my girlfriend and I came down on my motorcycle with a cargo trailer behind it.
Oh God!
And we ran into some heavy rain on the way. You know, 2-3 times. So we're pretty clean.
Well, just I'll tell you what. If you're going to be riding around Atlanta on a motorcycle, let me tell you right now that you've got to be careful. You will not experience drivers, and I use that term loosely, the way you'll experience them here. L.A. freeways, piece of cake.
Yeah.
New York State Thruway, doesn't mean anything. New Jersey
right.
Turnpike, a Sunday afternoon. You are in Atlanta, friend. If you are riding a motorcycle, please, please, Will, they will kill you. They will kill you. They'll kill you for your corneas, your heart, your liver, your kidneys. I'm serious.
I hear you.
Please be careful.
No, we're gonna be taking the rapid transit.
MARTA, you're gonna take rapid transit. Good idea. Good
and
idea.
And then we'll hop on the freeway and get out of here on Saturday.
All right. On Saturday? I thought the forum ran until Sunday.
Oh, yeah, Sunday. Excuse me.
Okay, there you go.
Glad
you made it, and I guess we're going to get together at some point, Friday, Saturday, and have a cup of coffee?
Sure.
Sounds good to me.
Do you want to put out where and when?
No. Hell
okay.
No. Oh, no.
All right. Anyway,
if you want to talk about the forum and what you're doing here, why you're here for it, I have other friends who are coming in for this. Go ahead, let her rip, because I don't know how many people know about this.
Well, this social forum is starting tomorrow,
right?
And it's going until Sunday, and it's going to be all kinds of people getting together and networking and sharing experiences, what works, what doesn't, you know. And we're going to try and change the path this country's going down.
Now, I understand that literally thousands of people are expected for this thing tomorrow.
Yeah, roughly 20,000.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some great speakers lined up. I don't have the website in front of me.
It's www.ussf2007.org.
USSF, like Frank, 2007.org.
Right.
USSF2007.org.
Right.
All right, so people can get whatever information they want. What is this, Tuesday? And it starts, I think, Thursday night, or is it Friday?
I think it starts tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
They started early registration for today.
Okay.
And tomorrow there's going to be a big march.
Mm-hmm.
So, head down to the Civic Center tomorrow and see what's going on.
All right. It sounds good. And we'll see you later on in the week, all right?
Right.
All right, Will. Take care. Thanks for checking in. Remember, be careful on your motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm serious as a heart attack. Thanks, Will. We'll talk to you later.
No problem. Bye.
USSF, like Frank, 2007.org, if you want to see what this is all about. I would imagine most people who are aware of this are already aware of it, if that sentence makes any sense whatsoever, which I don't think it does. Dave is calling. He's listening via Sirius Satellite Radio in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for helping my little engine that could. A couple things. I'm participating in an arm revolution. I'm picking up my arm, and I'm voting for President Mike Gravel.
Okay.
It's Gravel 2008 U.S., and that U.S. stands for us. And it's time that we take it back, and I'm supporting him till the end.
An arm revolution. I like that.
Yes. I'm picking my arm up, and I'm voting for President Mike Gravel. And early on, when the current administration was talking about torture, and they didn't want to talk about it because they said that they were afraid that people might be schooling on it. And, well, being an activist, I have one for you. Hang on. I'm practicing waterboarding. You got to, man. The way things are going down, you don't know it's coming around the corner. What happened last night? You talked first thing when the show came on about the British press talking about either Blackwater dressing up as Iranians or Iranians coming across the border. Whatever happened with that?
I don't know. The story disappeared.
I looked it up when I got...
nothing.
I went to the computer at the library, and it was gone. I was like, oh, shit, man, what the hell
happened? No. You can't. Dave. Dave. It's okay. It's just that there's certain words that we can't broadcast. They're okay on Sirius. They're okay on the internet, but they're not okay on over the air radio broadcasting. But the waterboarding practice is probably a good idea. God only knows what's in store for us. We'll talk again, Dave, all right? We have a break here. Oh, my God! Another break! And then we'll come back for the final hour of the program. One open line. The number here is 800-989-1480. Love to hear from you tonight. Just phone calls the rest of the program. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Stay with us. It's still the Malloy program. It's still Novem Radio. I still have not had a massive stroke. Welcome back. Let's go right back to your phone calls. Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD in that city. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing fine, sir.
I'll tell you, I'm not surprised. That's to be expected about Nancy Pelosi. the gall, the audacity that that woman has to go in front of the cameras before the election of 2006, November, whatever it was, October, and say, impeachment is off the table. Tipped her hand through the whole election back into the Senate in favor of the Republicans. That's why it's even out. That's why they lost the vote. Because she tipped her hand on saying that impeachment was off the table. And not only that, but the House of Representatives got a little bit closer, too, after she said that. And I'm not surprised at this Hillary and this Barack Obama. He's another. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on Lockheed Martin's list, too. Okay? And all of them. Yeah. There is no more two-party system, as far as I'm concerned. There's just, these people are just a little bit to the right of center as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I have no respect for this system of government, this democracy. They call this democracy. It's a lot of crap. Okay? There's no, you got a guy there with $5 billion in his back pocket, this Bloomberg. You don't even know if he can pass a pre-algebra test. We're supposed to take everything for granted about these politicians. With this big money stuff, you don't even know if they're qualified in aptitude to take the position of President of the United States.
Mm.
And we're supposed to go up there and vote. Oh, yeah, go ahead, go up there and vote. We'll outnumber them, even though the machines are fixed up, you see? This is what goes on all the time. And they take everybody, they take the public for a bunch of big suckers, every single one of them. Every single one of these politicians. Look at that Murtha. The same thing with him.
What's the solution, Joe? Do you have any ideas? I damn sure don't.
You need aptitude. Sorry, I don't mean to raise my voice, but I'm really mad.
Well, I understand.
I'm mad at all this.
Yeah, so am I.
We need aptitude exams for these politicians. Let's see how well educated these people are. They've been out of college for a long time, right? Maybe 10, 15 years. We don't know if they can still have the same aptitude as when they left college. We don't know anything about these people.
All right, what would being college educated? I mean, George Bush has a degree from Yale and Harvard. So
that's the point. You think he could pass a pre-algebra test?
Hell
you
no.
Give him a 101 algebra test. He's lost.
He couldn't diagram a sentence.
He couldn't even answer the second part of a question. What's the
part? What's the second part?
All right, yo, Joe, other than an aptitude test, what else? I mean,
what else?
Yeah.
What else is there left, Mike? You tell me. Maybe you got a solution. But that's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah.
Let's give them an exam. Let's see what these people are really worth. Let's see what they really know. They're always bragging about themselves, about how well qualified they all are. These Democrats, they're just as bad as the rest of them.
Well, what about the Republicans?
Oh, forget about that.
Oh,
that's been gone along. You know the story. You know better than I do, buddy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just all right. So who does that leave?
And you're the only guy I can listen to anymore. I can't listen to none of that.
I know.
That's the solution. That's the only. And what about these electronic voting machines?
Oy.
And we're just going to keep going on like this. And the Supreme Court. You see all the weaknesses in this government?
Yeah, I do.
How are we going to get out of it?
Train? Airplane? go somewhere? I don't know. What do you want to do, Joe? Tell me what you want to do. I hear you. I share some of the same stuff. I don't have any solutions. What are yours?
What can I do? I'm only one guy. I can only complain about it. I can only make suggestions. I'm powerless. I'm just a middle-class guy trying to get along.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do?
I don't know.
I can complain to you. I can make suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, but somebody's got to hear me out there. Somebody's got to be good. I don't see that right now.
Maybe it's not in our generation. Maybe it's going to take like these kids who, you know, the presidential scholars who presented a letter to this freak. And to Bush that said, "Hey, Mr. President, could you please stop the torture? You know, maybe our generation is awash, Joe. Most of us are either too old or too tired, or have been there, have done that, and or have copped out and became Republicans or became libertarians or independents or whatever. So maybe all you and I can do, if we really feel like doing something, is bitch and complain and moan, and it's up to the next generation or the one behind that to make some changes. What do you think, Joe?
Well, yeah, you're right. But it's like Pap Antonio says, your friend Mike.
Yeah.
He says, the Republicans play with automatic weapons, and the Democrats pull out switchblade knives. You know?
Yeah.
That's the whole story in a nutshell.
All right. Listen,
thanks,
Joe,
for letting me talk.
Sure, Joe. Thanks for checking in, pal. Appreciate it. I know what he means. Cindy is calling from San Diego, also listening on KLSD. Hey, Cindy, welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
That's a hard call to follow up. He hit it right on the head, but I want to agree with him. I have to say that a lot of the Democrats are just falling right into line. I mean, and just they're doing exactly what the Republicans want. They don't know how to fight like dogs, like the Republicans do. I mean, I listened to Jeff Farias today, and there were these people calling up going, Jeff Lugar, that what a nice guy. You know, we should be bipartisan with the Republicans now. That's the only way we're going to get our country back. And I called, and I'm like, you guys got to be out of your mind. And I have to honestly say, one of your friends there on Air America, Randy Rhodes, needs to wisen her butt up real fast, because every time callers call up and go, you know, the Democrats need to whip it in shape here, or else, you know, they're going to just start being a party of fall behind the Republicans. She hangs up on caller. She's real rude and says, you guys are whining, you guys are whining. Well, how are we going to hold the Democrats accountable unless we call them out for what they are? They're co-accomplices to what's going on with the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And the subject.
Well,
and she goes right along with them. And she says, I won't be a lackey for anybody. She sure is a lackey. She's following everything they say.
Well, wait, Cindy, do me a favor. And if you have a beef with Randy, take it up on her program, because, you know, I feel kind of uncomfortable.
Sure, I know.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
Because I didn't hear it, and you know, Randy has her particular point of view, and Tom Hartman has his, and I have mine, and
you always let callers speak their mind. Even if they're going to say something bad about Democrats, you let them speak their mind. And I think that's what we need to do. How are we going to solve our problems if we don't say, look, these guys are getting just as bad as the Republicans?
Well, maybe you ought to call. I'm serious about this now, because sometimes this works. Maybe you ought to call Randy tomorrow.
No, she won't let. The minute she hears that, she gets rude on the phone with people and says that we're whining. Many people have called up lately and said, look, the Democrats are better shape up. And the minute they say that, she goes, they've only been in power 6 months. What do you expect? She's codependent with them. 6 months, come on, guys. I mean, 6 months, you can get a, it's a bunch of baloney. If the Democrats wanted to hold these people accountable, they would have started impeachment, and I'm tired of hearing their excuses.
Yeah. Well,
so that leaves us, I guess you know where that leaves us, Mike. We are a country with no party. We are a country in a dictatorship right now, and the way democracy was in this country, it's gone. And the sooner, like you said, the sooner people realize it, maybe we'll change. And maybe things got to get really bad before they get better.
Well, I hear you, Cindy, and I appreciate you checking in. Don't give up on Randy, though. Just, she might have been in a bad mood. Call her up. Let her know how you feel. Hey, thanks for checking in, Cindy. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison. Black, stretched to the point of
past the hour. Welcome back. Back to your phone calls. Brett is calling from Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINZ. Welcome to the program, Brett.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I'm just wondering, what do you think the best way is to pull Cheney and Bush out of Iraq? I mean, they seem to be enjoying it so much. I mean, how do you do it?
I have no idea. The Constitution provides for a way to remove these people from office when the behavior becomes so egregious, so in violation of the law, so counter to the interests of the American people. There's a mechanism in place. It's called impeachment. But it has to arise in the House. It has to come from the House Judiciary Committee. And the person who controls the agenda, at least along the lines of impeachment, is the Speaker of the House. That would be Nancy Pelosi, and she's made it very clear it's not going to happen. So short of impeachment, the only other thing I can think of is if at least 30 or 35 Republican senators made a trip into the Oval Office and explained to Bush that his reign is over and that he had so destroyed the country as to render this nation almost a parody of what it might have been at one time. And that perhaps would get Bush's attention, even though I doubt that. So there is no remedy that I can see. And I hate to be pessimistic, Brett, but I don't see anything. Do you?
No, because I think they're going to play it out as long as they can. I think they've shown that.
Oh, sure. I mean, what's to stop them? When somebody is out of control, when they're throwing a tantrum, what's to stop them? There's only two things. If a parent steps in and forcibly stops the tantrum, or if the tantrum just runs its course and then peters out. And that's there's no parent to step in and stop Cheney and Bush. There is none. One does not exist. So,
and as long as the money pipeline is flowing and they're hooked up to the Treasury, I mean, why do they want to turn that loose? They just got this last appropriations bill. They're going to That's just all getting siphoned off. I mean, it's just an unending vacuum into the Treasury.
Well, yeah, and I think history at some point, either sooner or later, will note that the corruption that this administration has perpetrated against the American people was enabled by the Democratic Party. And that upsets me because I'm a Democrat.
Me too, but I have to still lay it on the Republicans because they had all three branches.
Well, I know. No, I do. But the Democrats at any time along the way could have made a stand. You know, this is a democracy. Well, this is a republic, which means that it is not mob rule. I don't care how many votes the Senate had on the Republican side, as long as they didn't have 60, as long as it wasn't veto proof, and it has not been, the Democrats could have stopped anything by using the filibuster. But they refuse to. Too many Democrats are really closeted Republicans and not very deep in the closet at all. Look at Lieberman. Look at Zell Miller before he hightailed it back up to the mountains of North Georgia. So the Democratic Party could have stopped this anywhere along the way. When the USA Patriot Act was rammed through the Senate, the senators could have said, no, stop, we need to read it. When the Homeland Security measures were rammed through the House and the Senate, at any point, the Democrats could have said, stop. Republicans, by definition, are criminals, liars, thugs. Democrats, by definition, are not. Some of them are, but not the whole party by definition. So that's why I fault, you can't fault a rabid dog from attacking you. That's the nature of a rabid dog. That's the Republican Party. But you can fault the Democratic Party for not putting up resistance to these bastards. So I hold the Democrats much more responsible for this than I do Republicans.
All right, Mike, then, before I go, hey, I just want to say that I'm pretty grateful for Progressive Radio because, for one thing, I've gotten to hear you, which I never knew before we got Progressive Radio on 940 down here. I got to hear Stephanie Miller, never got to hear her before that. and she's fantastic. And Mike Papantonio on the weekends mm-hmm. is just a rabid pit bull.
Well, I'll tell
that's
you,
the kind of Democrat you're talking about.
I'll tell you what to do. Let WINZ know that you appreciate the programming that they're putting on, because I'll tell you, some of these radio stations that carry this kind of programming, they're bucking the tide. You know what I mean?
Well, we're stacked from morning till night, so I got to take it off my hat off to our program director down here. And the big corporations are advertising during the day. I made it a point to listen for that today.
That's great. Brett, I have to leave it there, pal. Thanks a lot. Let WINZ know how much you appreciate the programming. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
More or less. More or less. Let me see. Back to your phone calls. Charles is calling from Boston, listening via the internet. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm a longtime fan. This is an absolute honor to speak with you.
Well, my pleasure.
What I wanted to mention is, though I'm very much liberal, I've been listening to some right-wing broadcasts, just trying to understand the logic or philosophy behind what they argue, and there seems to be a consistent thing between the different people like O'Reilly and Hannity and so forth. They seem to single out different groups of people to hate, and I'm trying to understand why would they do this. I mean, right now the focus is on illegal immigrants, which, of course, that bleeds into hatred of all immigrants, particularly any from Mexico. Like, for example, Michael Savage is just he's dehumanizing people who are mm-hmm. Hispanic. And I'm trying to understand, like, why do these people have such hatred for everyone?
I don't know that they do have hatred. I think what it is, they have nothing to say. So they pick up on issues that they know have people upset, and then they focus on the upsetness rather than trying to approach an issue like immigration,
mm-hmm.
which is eminently solvable.
Yeah.
This is not like the insanity of George W. Bush taking us into two wars. Mm-hmm. It is not like the destruction of the environment. Those problems are not eminently solvable. They're solvable, but it's going to take a tremendous amount of work, and it's probably going to go on for years. The immigration problem could be solved very simply, in my opinion. But these right wingers are not looking for solutions. What they're looking for is some way to increase their ratings, and that usually works through hate. Just ask the Nazis back in Germany in the 30s. Ask the religious right in this country right now about gays. The best way to whip up hatred is to pick on a group that either doesn't have a voice to respond or doesn't have the power, political power or other sorts of power, to respond in kind. And if it's an issue that is dividing the country or at least causing people in the country to get upset, then the right wingers or the neo-Nazis have the perfect thing to do their talk shows with. So I don't know what Limbaugh or Hannity or Savage, I don't know what their real opinion is of immigrants. I know Limbaugh appreciated the fact that he had an immigrant who would go get him drugs. As far as Hannity, I wonder if Hannity at his home in Long Island, if he uses a white nanny or a brown nanny for his children or a housekeeper, and if he does, if he's checked out the papers. I think this is an issue of just whipping up an audience that they don't care. This is the thing about right wingers. They don't care if gays get married. They don't care if there's prayer in the school. They don't care if abortions are available. They don't care if a woman has a right to privacy. But they know that other people do care about these things. So they whip up this violence inside people who are single issue oriented, whose lives are so narrow that all they can think about is those dirty, rotten immigrants. And the fact is, those dirty, rotten immigrants have absolutely no effect on the lives of the people that are being whipped up. So that's a long answer to your question.
Well, here in Massachusetts, we allow gay marriage, which I think is fantastic. We're a very progressive state, but we also have a very conservative underbelly. The right-wingers, unfortunately, dominate radio. So if you turn on the radio, you'll hear these right-wingers voicing hatred for gay people simply because you have two adults who love each other, and these people react to love with hatred. And there's going to be some mental illness there.
Again, I don't think, look at Dick Cheney, who works in an illegal administration that vowed to work for a constitutional amendment to prevent gays from doing anything except staying in the closet. Look at Dick Cheney, whose daughter, in her relationship with a woman, just had a baby that these two women now consider to be their own. Dick Cheney and his sorry sick wife Lynn, sorry and sick for other reasons, sit there and glory over their grandchild, and yet they would deny the same kind of grandparenting feeling, the same kind of joy to other gay people other than their daughter, simply because they are bastards and mean-spirited. They operate outside the framework that everyone else operates in. So I don't think Dick Cheney hates gay people or hates the idea of gay marriage. I think it's an issue that he knows. It's an issue that Sean Hannity and the drug-addled Rush Limbaugh and the psychopathic Michael Savage, they see that issue and they see that people get upset about it, so they focus in on it. They couldn't care less.
It gets me. I mean, half these right-wingers claim to be such devout Christians, yet, if I'm not mistaken, Jesus Christ advocated tolerance, peace, and love.
They're not Christians. They're not Christians. First of all, Michael Savage is Jewish, but he's not. Sean Hannity's not a Christian. Rush Limbaugh's not a Christian. And I don't think Savage is Jewish. These people pervert the very religions that by birth or by upbringing they've been cast into. They don't give a damn. Limbaugh would cut Jesus' throat in a heartbeat if it meant that would appease some of his right-wing listeners. Savage would urinate all over the Torah if he knew that would irritate people and get him more ratings. Sean Hannity would crucify the Pope if he thought that there were people out there that would appreciate that and increase. These people are hypocrites. They're religious and political hypocrites of the highest order, Charles. And I've been in the business long enough to be able to smell them. I smell their stench a million miles away, and so do you, apparently.
Well, do you think they're conscious of the fact that what they're spewing is complete BS, or do you think...
Oh, sure they do. It's a joke to them. The whole thing is... Look, these guys get paid millions and millions and millions of dollars a year. I think Limbaugh gets $50 million. Do you realize that's $1 million a week? I think Hannity makes about $4 million a year. There's no telling what Savage makes.
And O'Reilly makes a fortune.
Oh, sure. So they'll do anything. It's all about the money. Do they think that they are righteous? Hell no. Do they think that they're advocating a cause? Hell no. It's show me the way to the bank. I'll say anything. I'll cut my own mother's gut open if it means I get the money and the power and the prestige that being a right-wing talk show host gives me.
Not much integrity over
there. No. Integrity and right-wing talk show hosts are as opposite as North and South. But anyway, well, I hope that explains it. Hey, Charles?
Well, thank you for talking, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Charles. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. God, I hate him. I just hate him. Steve is calling from Folsom, California, listening on KSAC. Hey, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Hey, Mike. You were talking about impeachment a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem... I don't think there's any real value add in impeachment right now. First of all, there's two of them. There's Cheney's worse than Bush. It's very, very late in the term. A special prosecutor would have to be appointed. Even if a special prosecutor could be appointed and you could go through the whole deal, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
It's going to be, sorry, I'm getting some.
That's all right.
So it's, even if you could go through the whole deal, it's going to be a civil matter, and there's some legal question as to once they're out of office, because once these guys are out of executive office, they can be prosecuted for crimes. For example, the War Crimes Act of 1996, which is a U.S. legislation, they are easily indictable under the War Crimes Act for criminal misconduct, whereas impeachment really relates to a civil matter.
But they have violated, no, it relates to constitutional matters, but they have violated, not only have they violated, in my opinion, criminal law and civil law, they've also violated constitutional law. Now, here's what it gets to. Here's why I think impeachment is important. First of all, late in the term means nothing. How late in the term was it when they impeached Bill Clinton and took him to trial in the Senate? And why did they do that? They did that because Republicans are venal, lousy, rotten bastards. That's why. They had no case against Clinton. The American people have a strong case against Bush and Cheney. But it's not up to the American people, and it's not up to Nancy Pelosi whether or not these people have committed acts that require impeachment. Remember, impeachment only means indictment. They have committed indictable crimes. Whether or not the Senate will find them guilty is something else again. But it's not up to you or me or Nancy Pelosi. The Constitution makes it very clear that high crimes and misdemeanors require that these people be put in the dock, at least in the sense of indicting them, impeaching them. Now, if Nancy Pelosi stands in the way of the Constitution working what the framers had in mind, then Nancy Pelosi is a co-conspirator in allowing the Bush-Cheney crime family to do what it's doing. You understand what I'm saying? This is so much bigger than the American public or Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or anyone else. The Constitution requires it. Now, either we follow the Constitution or we don't. The Bush operation does not. So if Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and the American public all agree that the Constitution is not to be followed, then what the hell do we have left? You understand what I'm saying?
That's absolutely true. I think if you listen to Pelosi and Feinstein and the others, what they seem to be saying is, we don't want to, and this is what they said some years ago as well, around the first Iraq, we don't want to be dividing the country.
Oh my God,
even
this country, yeah, it could not be more divided than it is. Steve, I got to leave it there. I'm sorry, pal. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world.
Thanks to our crew again tonight. Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix at KPHX, answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. The militant moderators at MikeMalloy.com at the message board. And also Billy Foster, who is a moderator at the NovaMRadio.com chat room. I didn't get in there tonight, guys and girls. Sorry. I will tomorrow night. Also, the executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls. Roger is calling from San Diego, also listening on KLSD. Hey, Roger.
Hi. A while ago, you asked, what do we do when a fellow was trashing the Democratic Party? And he didn't seem to have an answer, but I think there are answers. Of course, it means we have to get the rank-and-file Democrats to go along. There are a couple of third parties already. There's a Labor Party that's gotten ballot status in, I think it's North Carolina. It might be South Carolina, I'm not sure, but you can check that out at thelaborparty.org. Of course, the other party is the Greens, and they're established around the country. And I think it would put a lot of pressure on the Democrats if a whole lot of people went to the web and went to switch2green.org. And registered green and got out of the Democratic Party, because I think you've got to be pretty dense by now if you don't see that the Democratic leadership is showing that they're just another party of corporate rule.
Yeah, I agree. Roger, I have got to end your call here because there's a buzz on your phone that is just a little bit too much for us to handle. I appreciate what you're saying. Assuming that you're listening, let me just say I've toyed with the idea of my signing on to a third party. The Greens are the ones that have come to mind immediately, but I think we're way beyond the time to do that. And I'll tell you why. And I don't want to piss anyone off here, but we don't have a parliamentary system of government here. If we did, that would be a different situation. We've got a two-party system that pretty much is has calcified into what it is. I think the only way to get us back on track, if that phrase is still operative, is to work somehow to demolish and destroy forever the Democratic Leadership Conference type Democrat, whether it's a Hillary Clinton or a Joe Lieberman or whoever they are. Just get rid of them. They are useless in terms of trying to get this country back to representative democracy. But as far as organizing a third party or working within a third party, here's the reason, and I've given this so much thought, the reason I simply can't or won't do it. There's not enough time. Operating a third, take a look at history. The Bull Moose Party, the Whig Party, the whomever party. Take a look at how long it took to organize back in the day. And then extrapolate from that. You know, when these other parties were put together, what was the population of the United States? 80 million? What are we now? 300 million? Maybe it was even less than 60 million? And how many people were active in politics? Probably 70% of the population back then. How many people are active in politics now? 3% of us? It's the corporations who do things. It's the corporations that have utter and absolute control. To me, the only way to turn this around is to put in Democrats who are real Democrats. Now, it sounds like a hell of a contradiction because I'm always leaving the Democratic Party. No, it's not a contradiction. I think the Democratic Party, the way it is set up now, the power structure, the power brokers within the Democratic Party now are absolutely worse than useless. And I'm talking about most of the top tier of presidential candidates and Senate leaders and House leaders. There are some exceptions. I don't think John Edwards is utterly useless. I don't think Dennis Kucinich is utterly useless. And, you know, I can go down the list. But I don't think Mike Gravel is. So many of these people, though, that claim to be Democrats are not. Come on, damn it. They're not Democrats. And I don't care who gets pissed off or who won't take a phone call or who sends me a nasty email. These are not Democrats. I get emails all the time. Oh, you got to stop knocking the Democratic Party. The hell I do. Are you out of your mind? I'm going to sit back on my ass while fake Democrats take over, have taken over this party? No. You want to play that game? Go play it somewhere else. Find your own sandbox. Don't come around me. Don't even come around me. Other talk show hosts who claim to be liberal or progressive, who are willing to go along with this Democratic Party leadership? No, to hell with it. I've got good friends who honestly believe that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or the Democratic Leadership Conference is the way out. And I have to say to those good friends, sorry, that's where you and I part company. At least they're not Republicans. Not quite. So, no, I'm not going for it. Not going for it. And as far as third-party politics are concerned, that's a romantic pipe dream. I'd like to see it happen. I really would. If this country weren't a half inch from total breakdown and slide into fascism, I would say, oh, yeah, okay, if this were the 40s or the 50s or the 60s, even the 70s, I'd say, okay, let's go for it. But it's not. It's now. And we have a corporate-dominated system. And they dominate the Republican Party totally and the Democratic Party damn near totally. So what do you want to do? What do you want to do? If you're young enough to spend the next 60 years organizing a third party, go for it. I don't have the time. I probably don't have enough time even to try to get real Democrats elected. But that's where my energy has to remain. It has to remain in that focus. What real Democrats do I see on the horizon? Hey, I don't see anybody on the horizon. Maybe because I'm just not looking. I'm sure they're out there. But as far as third party, if you want to do that, do that. Far be it from me to tell anybody how to conduct their political life. I mean, it sounds like I do it every night, but if you listen closely to this program, you'll find, no, I'm not. I'm not telling anybody how to do anything. I've said before, I have no answers. None. All I have are more questions. Thanks for participating tonight. However you did that, I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.